We're the majority in this hall right now. So the Buddha taught 16 exercises of mindful breathing. We have already learned the first exercise and also the second exercise. The first is breathing in. I know this is an in-breath. Breathing out. I know I'm breathing out. Breathing out, I know this is an out-breath. We identify the in-breath as in-breath, out-breath as out-breath. It's easy. And when you do that, you bring your attention to the in-breath and the out-breath. And you let go of all other thinking. You let go of the past, the future, your projects. You are only with your in-breath and you're free. And your in-breath becomes the sole object of your attention, of your awareness, of your mind. And you can enjoy just breathing. You can experience joy, peace when you breathe in. You are no longer consumed by thinking about the past or the future. You're free of the past, you're free of the future. You're free of all thinking, because thinking can carry you very far away. If you're caught in thinking, then you can't really be there. Descartes said, "I think, therefore I am." But in the light of this practice, when you think like that, you're not really there. You're carried away by your thinking. I think, therefore, I am not really there. When you bring your attention to your in-breath, you're not thinking about your in-breath. It's not thinking. It's an experience. You are living your in-breath. That's life. It's not a thought. Your in-breath is not a thought. It's a reality. And you are living that reality, which is your in-breath. Breathing in, I enjoy my in-breath. And when you breathe in this way, in mindfulness, you can see many things. You can touch the miracle of life. Because when you breathe in mindfulness, you realize that you are alive. And to be alive is a fantastic thing. Be here in the here and now, breathing. It's wonderful. To be alive is one of the greatest of miracles. To be alive, breathing, taking steps on this planet, It's a wonderful thing. And you can celebrate life with what? You celebrate life here, not with wine or music, but with your breathing and your steps. You can realize that the kingdom of God is available here and now. Everything around you belongs to the kingdom of God. Your own body and mind also belong to the kingdom of God. And you can enjoy in fact, the kingdom of God is available in the here and now. With mindfulness and concentration, you can get in touch and live every moment of your daily life as a miracle. And we can do it today. So, the first exercise, very simple, can bring you a great deal. Mindfulness, concentration, and insight. That insight is that you are really there, alive, and everything around you. You're not only this body, but your environment. You are all of this, and all of this is the kingdom of God. A practice so simple, and yet it can bring so much. The miracles of joy, happiness. The second exercise, breathing in, I follow my in-breath all the way from the beginning to the end. The in-breath may last 2, 3, 5, 7 seconds, and I follow the entire in-breath from the very beginning to the very end without any interruption. You stay with your in-breath from the beginning to the end. And you enjoy the whole journey, the whole length of the breath. And that way your concentration becomes stronger and stronger. And that's how we train in concentration. Because mindfulness carries within it the energy of concentration, and with concentration, an insight may manifest at any moment. So the first exercise is the identification. Of the in-breath and the out-breath. The second exercise is staying with, following the in-breath and out-breath for the whole length of the in-breath or the out-breath. Third exercise, proposed by the Buddha, breathing in, I am aware of my whole body during the length of the in-breath. You get in touch with your physical body, and the physical body becomes the object of your mindfulness. That means you bring the mind back to the body, there's a reunion, a reunification of the body and mind so that you can be really there in the present moment. Body and mind together. The unity, the oneness of body and mind, that's the object of the third exercise. Breathing in, I'm aware of my entire body. This is an act of reconciliation between the mind and the body. Perhaps you have abandoned, neglected your body for some time. You may have not taking good care of your body by the way you eat, the way you work. So this is a moment of reconciliation between the body and mind. Breathing in, I'm aware of my whole body. And we know very well that breathing like this, you're really there. You're really alive. And you have something to offer the other person. You're there for yourself, and you're there for him or for her. So we should apply this practice in our daily life. And being with your body, you can see what's happening, what's going on in the body. You may recognize that there is tension in the body. There may be pain in the body. Perhaps that pain is chronic because you have allowed it to go on like that for a long time. And you have allowed the tension to accumulate. And also the pain in the body. So now, as you return to the body, you can do something to be able to release this tension and reduce the amount of pain in the body. And that's why the Buddha offered us the fourth exercise, breathing in. I release the tension in my body. I reduce the suffering in my body. Third exercise. Recognizing the existence of the body. Fourth exercise. Releasing tension. Allowing the tension to flow out of the body. Breathing in, I'm aware of my body. Breathing out, I'm aware of my body. Breathing in, tension in my body, the pain, suffering in my body, release. Releasing tension. And when the tension is released, the pain is reduced. So with the first four exercises, we learn to handle our breathing and our body. I have a body. I want to take care of my body. I want to take good care of my body, handle it well. And my breath is part of my body. So the first four exercises are to handle the body, to take care of the body. But as things are connected, we are already starting to get in touch with feelings. Because when we get in touch with our body, we can recognize the tension, the pain. The tension produces a sensation, an unpleasant sensation or feeling. And pain is also an unpleasant sensation or feeling. So because of that, we practice letting go. We release the tension so that we can feel better and we can reduce the pain in the body. What the Buddha proposed is very methodical and very simple. So now in the fifth exercise, we move into the realm of the sensations, the feelings. The fifth exercise is to elicit, to bring forth a pleasant feeling, a feeling of joy. As a practitioner, we should be capable of bringing forth, generating a feeling of joy, of happiness. In Buddhism, we speak of suffering, but we also speak of joy. And a practitioner should know how to handle happiness and suffering. In fact, the fifth exercise is to... the seventh exercise is for taking care of pain or suffering. The fifth and sixth are for handling happiness. So you can see that the Buddha wants to speak about happiness first and suffering after. He knows that we need some joy, some happiness to give us the strength to go far. That's why he proposed a practice that can bring up a feeling of happiness, a feeling that is pleasant for our nourishment and for our joy. Breathing in, I recognize a pleasant feeling. There are three kinds of feelings: pleasant feelings, unpleasant feelings, and neutral feelings. And for me, there's a fourth one, the mixed feeling. It means there's a happiness and a pain kind of mixed up together. So the fifth exercise is for recognizing a feeling that's pleasant. You can recognize a pleasant feeling when it manifests. Or you can bring it up at any moment. Because you are a practitioner, you know how to recognize a feeling of happiness, and you can also bring forth a feeling of happiness. You can generate that. With mindfulness, with concentration, it is always possible to bring up a feeling of happiness. There are so many conditions of happiness that are available in the present moment. If you take a piece of paper and a pencil, and you can write down the conditions of happiness that are available in the present moment, in the beginning, you're not sure you're going to be able to make much of a list of conditions of happiness that are already there. But you'll be surprised to find that even the two sides of that piece of paper will not be enough to write down all the conditions of happiness that are already available. When we look at our own body, when we look at the environment, we can identify many conditions of happiness that are already available. Hundreds, thousands. For example, your eyes. Your eyes are a condition of happiness. When you have eyes still in good shape, you need only to open them to see a paradise of shapes and colors. When we have lost our eyesight, then we see, we recognize that to have good vision is a wonder. And you have that. You have good eyesight. So your good eyes are already a condition of happiness. Thanks to your eyes being in good condition, this whole paradise of shapes and colors is available to you. You just open your eyes. If you touch that condition of happiness, then happiness arrives. And there are hundreds of conditions, thousands of conditions, just like that. For example, your heart. Breathing in, I'm aware of my heart. With mindfulness, you recognize the presence of your heart. You can practice the second mantra with your heart. Breathing in, I know my heart is there and I'm very happy. To have a heart that functions normally is a great happiness. You may have a chance to take a rest sometimes, but your heart never stops working. It's beating for you 24 hours a day. And your heart is working normally. That's a wonderful thing. There are those among us who don't have a heart like that, and they're always afraid of having a heart attack or some other heart ailment. All they want, then there's nothing they want more than to have a normal heart, just like the one you have. So you breathe and you recognize the presence of your heart, and you are touching another condition of happiness that's there. Breathing in, I'm aware of my heart. Breathing out, I smile to my heart with a lot of gratitude. So there you are, you're touching another condition of happiness, and you can touch hundreds of conditions of happiness right there in your own body and mind and around you. So with mindfulness, with concentration, it is always possible to bring forth a feeling of happiness. In French, they have a song expressing this. Qu'est-ce qu'on attend pour être heureux? What are we waiting for to be happy? Because the conditions of happiness are already there, more than enough. And we don't know why people aren't happy. All we need to do is come back to ourselves and recognize the conditions of happiness that are available, and happiness comes right away. That's why a practitioner can always generate a feeling of happiness anytime, any place. And if you are capable of producing a feeling of joy and happiness, then you will also be able to handle painful feelings. So as practitioner, we know how to handle our suffering. A person who doesn't practice doesn't know how to handle, how to deal with a painful feeling, a strong emotion. But you who are practitioners, you know what to do. When a painful feeling comes up, when a strong emotion comes, you are not a victim. You know what to do with mindfulness, with concentration, with your insight. You can very well take care of that suffering. You can handle it. The practice consists of, first, just a pure and simple recognition. Mindfulness is an energy that allows you to recognize what is going on in your body, in your feelings, in your perceptions, and in the environment. That is mindfulness. Mindfulness is the energy of recognizing what's going on. When you breathe in, you recognize that an in-breath is going on in the present moment. So thanks to mindfulness, you practice recognizing, recognition of that in-breath, the out-breath. So this is just pure, simple recognition, bare recognition. This is an in-breath that's going on. And your practice is to light up the lamp of mindfulness to recognize that an in-breath is happening. We just recognize what's going on. We don't need to intervene. So when a feeling of happiness or of suffering comes up, we can just recognize the feeling as it is. Even a pleasant feeling we can just recognize. We don't need to try to cling to, clutch onto it, grasp onto it. Pure, simple recognition, mere recognition of what is happening, a pleasant sensation. We don't try to grab onto the pleasant sensation. We don't try to push it away. Just pure recognizing of its existence. And when a painful feeling comes, we do the same thing. We don't attach ourselves. And we don't try to fight the unpleasant feeling. We don't try to repress it. We just simply recognize its presence. We stay free. Even if that is a painful feeling, a feeling is just a feeling. And you are much more than that feeling. We shouldn't let ourselves be carried away by a feeling, even if it's a pleasant one, much less an unpleasant one. Pure, bare recognition of the feeling. So the fifth exercise is So here, Tai. Yeah, okay. So the fifth exercise is to recognize a feeling of joy, and the sixth is to recognize a feeling of happiness. Tai's writing them on the board in French first and then in the Chinese character. In Buddhism, there is a slight distinction made between joy and happiness. Imagine someone is walking in a desert, and that person is very thirsty. He has nothing to drink. All of a sudden, he sees an oasis up ahead. He's going to be able to drink up there. So that's the feeling of joy. In about 15 minutes, I will be there and I will have water to drink. So that is a feeling of joy. And when this friend arrives at the oasis and comes to the pool, kneels down and drinks the water, then there is the sensation of happiness. So joy and happiness are slightly different. In the joy, there's still a little bit of excitement. Joy has a little bit of excitement in it. Happiness has a more peaceful feeling, like contentment. So, a practitioner, we have to be here, be there for our feelings. There's a whole river of feelings that's flowing day and night in us. And every feeling is one drop in that river. A feeling born is born, manifests, stays for a time, and then goes on, passes away. We can sit at the bank of this river of feelings and observe. Recognize each feeling as it manifests, see it remaining, and seeing it passing away. We should not try to hang on or to push away. You're free. Even from your own feelings, we have to train. Recognizing feelings. And it also means that you can bring forth a feeling of well-being, a feeling of happiness with mindfulness. With mindfulness, you can recognize and get in touch with the conditions of happiness that are already there to give rise to a feeling of joy, a feeling of happiness, to nourish yourself and to heal yourself. So the practitioner is capable of bringing up a feeling of joy, of happiness, to nourish and to heal herself. So the seventh exercise is to recognize a painful feeling. Breathing in, I know that a painful feeling is there. Recognizing a painful feeling, unpleasant feeling. There's a feeling of pain. It's a kind of energy. And a non-practitioner can be carried away by that painful feeling, overtaken by it. And she becomes a victim of this painful feeling. A sensation in the body or an emotion. There can be strong emotions that are very painful. These are zones of energy that manifest from the depths of our consciousness. And every time a painful feeling or emotion comes up, the practitioner should know how to handle that feeling. And the method that the Buddha proposed is to get in touch with the seed of mindfulness in us. We can breathe, we can walk in order to generate another energy that will be able to take care of the first energy of the painful feeling. So this second energy that we generate is the energy of mindfulness and concentration. This is why all of us need to train ourselves in breathing and walking in mindfulness. When we do that, the energy of mindfulness and concentration will manifest, and it is with precisely that energy that we will be able to handle the painful feeling. So second zone of energy is the mindfulness and concentration. And the first one in the inner circle is the painful feeling. And we follow this method with the energy of mindfulness and concentration. We recognize, just recognize the painful feeling. Hello, my despair. Hello, my anger. Hello, my sadness. I know you're there. I'm going to take good care of you. That's what mindfulness and concentration do. And they do it just like a mom whose baby is crying. When the baby cries, the mother puts down what she's doing. She goes into the baby's room. She takes the baby into her arms with a lot of softness, gentleness. As a practitioner, we do exactly the same thing as that mom. Our pain is our baby, and we should not be violent towards it. That's our very own baby. Hello, my little fear. Hello, my little despair. I know you. I'm going to take good care of you. With the energy of mindfulness generated by the practice of walking and breathing, we will be able to embrace, recognize, and tenderly hold that feeling. You can sing a lullaby to embrace, to soothe your pain. There's the energy of the pain, and there's also the energy of mindfulness and concentration. And when the mindfulness energy embraces the painful energy, there will be an effect. This energy of mindfulness will penetrate will permeate in the form of particles. You know that a lotus flower in the earliest hours of the morning is closed, and as the sun comes up, the sun begins to visit the flowers, the sunlight. The sunlight comes in, and it doesn't only surround the lotus flower, but as little photons, it penetrates the lotus flower as in an energy, and soon that flower will open. That is exactly the same thing we do here. When we embrace our pain, the seeds, the photons of mindfulness and concentration penetrate into that zone of pain. And it will bring a relief after some minutes. Just like when a mom embraces tenderly her baby. The mom may not even know yet exactly what is wrong. She doesn't know yet, but just the fact of bringing the baby into her arms with so much tenderness already helps, because that tenderness of the mom already begins to penetrate into the body of the child. The energy of tenderness, the energy of it's like in the wintertime, if your room is cold, you use your radiator, you turn it on, and it puts out waves of heat. And those heat waves don't chase out the cold, they embrace, they permeate the cold air. And after some time, the air becomes warmer. There's no violence in this. There's no fighting. It is non-violent. So mindfulness and concentration embrace the pain with non-violence. And that is exactly what a practitioner does. Mindfulness is for recognizing the presence of the pain. Like in the second mantra, my dear, I know you're there and I'm going to take good care of you. Concentration helps mindfulness to remain there, to recognize and embrace the pain. And if you do walking meditation, mindful breathing for some minutes, you will be able to bring some relief to that pain. And you can go farther. So farther along, the Buddha will teach us how to look more deeply into transforming our pain into joy. But for right now, we're still in the first stage. We only need to recognize the pain, embrace it tenderly, and already we can bring a relief. So the seventh exercise is to recognize this painful feeling, and the eighth is to embrace and soothe, bring a relief. The Buddha knows very well what our situation is. Bringing a relief. Exactly like what we did with the body. First, we just recognize the presence of the body, and second, we bring some relief. And so here we do the same with the feelings. We recognize the pain, and we bring relief. We have to train. Every one of us has our practice, our spiritual life. We need to have a spiritual life in our daily life, a spiritual dimension. This we call the Dharma body. You have a physical body, and you also have a spiritual body. And with that spiritual body, you know how to take care of a suffering or happiness. Dharmakaya is the Dharma body. Dharmakaya. Kaya is the body. Dharma is the spiritual. The spiritual body is your practice body. It doesn't matter where you go, you always bring your practice with you. You don't have to be afraid of anything. You know how to handle a suffering. You know how to handle happiness. You may have the habit of carrying around your cell phone with you everywhere you go, and you think without your cell phone you can't live. As a practitioner, we bring our practice. And it doesn't make your bag any heavier when you bring your Dharma body along. So when you go somewhere, take your practice with you. There needs to be a spiritual dimension in our daily life, and that consists of seeing our capacity of taking care of pain or happiness. And if you have your practice with you, why should you be afraid? So we want to nourish, to feed our Dharma body. Your Dharma body should be vigorous, strong, robust. Everywhere you go, you have your Dharma body. You have confidence. You can face any difficulty. So the Buddha had his Dharma body, and you have your Dharma body with your practice. You can handle anything. In Buddhism, we speak of the Buddhakaya. It means the Buddha body. The Buddha body. And every one of us has a Buddha body. Not only the Buddhas have a Buddha body, but each one of us has a Buddha body. We are Buddhas becoming and becoming. We each have an inherent Buddha nature. That's what the Buddha affirmed. Because in you there is that seed of mindfulness. Everyone has a seed of mindfulness in him or her. Everyone is capable of breathing in mindfully, even a very young person. Everyone can drink their tea in mindfulness. Everyone can take a step in mindfulness. So it's a truth that the seed of mindfulness is in you, the Buddha nature. It's the Buddha body in you, because mindfulness carries within it the energy of concentration. That's why the seed of concentration is also in you. Later on, we will learn in Buddhism there are practices of concentration that can liberate us from fear, from anger, from despair. And that seed of concentration is there in us. And along with mindfulness and concentration, there's also insight. Insight is wisdom, understanding. If you look at the stained glass window here in this hall, you see these three words in Sanskrit. Smriti on the left means mindfulness. Samadhi in the center is concentration. And prajna on the right means insight, wisdom, awakening. So mindfulness with concentration always brings insight that liberates us, that gives us freedom and joy. And this is the heart of Buddhist practice. The seed of wisdom, the seed of perfect understanding is in us, and that's why we know every person possesses a Buddha body in him or her. We have to give the Buddha in us a chance. The surest place to find a Buddha is in ourself. It's not up on the altar. On the altar, you see a Buddha made of bronze or ceramic, but the real Buddha is in you, in the form of mindfulness, concentration, and insight. If you are inhabited by the energy of mindfulness, if you speak, if you eat, if you walk in mindfulness, the Buddha is there. And in Buddhism, holiness is this. Holiness is made of mindfulness, concentration, and insight. And when I see you walking in this way in mindfulness, with solidity, with happiness, I see the holiness in you. We can call you your holiness. It's true. Every one of us has our holiness. because the Buddha body is in us and we have to give it a chance to manifest fully. When the Buddha is there, we don't suffer. Happiness is possible. So live your life, your daily life, in such a way that you give the Buddha body in you the chance to manifest as often as possible. And thanks to our practice body, you can help the Buddha body in you to manifest in every moment of your daily life. Dharma body. Dai's writing that in Chinese. Dharmakaya. Your way of walking, of breathing, of eating, of taking a shower. That is your practice body, your Dharmakaya. And if you use your practice body, you will have peace and happiness. Taking that shower, eating your lunch. If the Dharmakaya is there, the Buddhakaya is there too. You have your physical body, but you also have your spiritual body, Dharmakaya, and your Buddha body, your Buddhakaya, in you.
Corpo spirituale, questo corpo di pratica, non ci sono dubbi che il Buddha è...
Buddha is in you. Because you have that seed of mindfulness, of concentration, and of insight that will grow, develop. We shouldn't go looking for the Buddha outside, elsewhere. The surest place to find the Buddha is in us. And we also have one other body. It's called the Sanghakaya. Sanghakaya. After enlightenment, at the foot of the Bodhi tree, the Buddha immediately thought of the Sangha, the community, because he knew that without a Sangha, he could not accomplish his dream, his career as a Buddha. Without a community, a Sangha, without a community, a Buddha cannot do very much. Like a musician with no instrument. So after enlightenment, the Buddha immediately thought to build a Sangha. And he went about doing that. He walked to find some people to practice with him, to make a Sangha together. A Sangha is a community that has a practice, Dharma. To generate the energy of mindfulness, concentration, and insight. And when a Sangha practices well, there is the energy of mindfulness, concentration and insight in the community. So the Dharmakaya, the practice body, can be found, the spiritual body can be found in the Sangha. The Sangha has to be a real Sangha. A group of people. That practice, who know how to generate the energy of mindfulness, concentration, insight. When we invite the bell to sound, everyone stops thinking, everyone comes back to their breathing and breathes mindfully. And the collective energy generated by the practice, everyone can feel that. So our Sangha is a true Sangha because it has practice. And if you practice correctly, you generate mindfulness, concentration. And these energies nourish and heal us greatly. When we walk together, 100 people walking in mindfulness, everyone together generates a collective energy of mindfulness, of peace, that nourishes all of us and can help to heal us. So when there is healing, peace, then we know it's a real Sangha. In a real Sangha there is love, there's brotherhood and sisterhood. And you can see it easily. In a real Sangha, there's the true Dharma. Because without the true Dharma, it can't be a true Sangha. And if the true Dharma is there, then the true Buddha is there too. The real Buddha is there. So you should look for Buddha in the Sangha. And you are part of the Sangha. You are an element of the Sangha. And you know very well that with the Sangha, the practice becomes much easier. Even with the Buddha, it's much easier for the Buddha to have a Sangha. That's why after enlightenment, he immediately went out to start a Sangha. When you're a practitioner, you want to continue your practice, you want to nourish and maintain your practice. So when you go back home, you need to look around to identify the elements of your Sangha. You have to start like the Buddha. To start building a Sangha right away. Don't wait for the next summer retreat in Plum Village. You need to start building a Sangha right away back home. And we can continue our practice. We can do walking, sitting, breathing, listening to the bell and mindfulness. Sangha building is something very important and very noble. Every one of us should think of doing this as soon as possible. If we are friends of the Buddha, if we are students of the Buddha, we should do what the Buddha did, build a Sangha. Without a sangha, the Buddha could not have done much, and the same is true with us. So build a sangha, and a true one, a sangha that can generate brotherhood, sisterhood, peace, the energy of mindfulness, and you don't need to be a Dharma teacher to start a sangha. You can start building a sangha right now. So each one of us has a sangha body. We should belong to a sangha in order for the practice to be maintained, to remain strong. We need to belong to a sangha, so we should build the sangha back home. It's very important. And we have helped to build sanghas already a little bit everywhere. In big cities like New York, London, there are dozens of sanghas. So you should build a sangha at your house, at your town, to create a refuge for yourself, for your children, for your friends. With the sangha, we can very easily keep our practice alive and move forward on the path of transformation and healing. And dear friends, after the bell and Tai goes out, please keep your earphones plugged in because the announcements will be in French, so translation will continue. Please remain seated, massage your legs.